2013. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola. I'm coming to you from the nice, sunny suburbs of Chicago. It's so wonderful to have finally a warm day. Looks like it's going to be a great weekend. Thanks for joining me today on RBN for people who can handle the truth. RBN's website is republicbroadcasting.org. To see the guest lineup and relevant links for this program, please visit spingola.com. Click on the radio schedule button, then the appropriate month. Follow some of those interesting links, usually associated with the program or something very interesting and compatible with the ideas for the guest for that particular day. During the program, email your questions or comments to spingola1@yahoo.com. Join others in the chat room by going to spingola.chatango.com. We will take calls in the second hour after we open the phone lines at 800-313-9443. My guest today is Carl Radl, that's R-A-D-L. He is the author of Communism and the Jews, a Source Reader. His website is SemiticController.blogspot.com. Carl, welcome to the program.
Hello, Deanna. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's wonderful to have you back. The last time we visited was when we had Charles on the program also, and I thought that was very interesting. I enjoyed the dialogue that we had, and in learning about his experiences, and I think that you added greatly to the mix. That was a very nice conversation.
I think I enjoyed it, and I think it helped him as well, dealing with his personal experiences that he's been undergoing in the last month or two. So I think it's been it was a real good thing. It was a good thing for him.
Yes. So he seems like a remarkable person, and I certainly do love his artwork.
Yeah, I mean, he's just had a very, very bad time of it lately. Because, you know, being called a, quote, Holocaust denier is, you know, it's always bad, regardless of who you are or what career you're in, because you're going to get character assassinated, and everyone under the sun is going to say you're irrational, you don't know what you're talking about, and you don't have any worth anymore, supposedly, because you question such a apparently well evidenced event. No, not really, but there you go.
Right. I've been doing a lot of research over the last 3 weeks on the Nuremberg trials.
On the Nuremberg trials?
Yes, yeah. It's quite amazing. I mean, most of the stories that we hear, most of the myths that we hear, were trumped up as people were getting ready, as Americans were getting ready, people in the War Department, the State Department, were getting ready for the trial. And most of those myths came out of that trial. And it wasn't a trial, it was a stage show, and when you look at some of the individuals that participated, for instance, the Russians that participated were the same people that did the show trials for Stalin in 1937-38.
And later.
it is just so obvious if you look at the stuff and read the actual history of it. And then you find the same people who participated in this in the Nuremberg show trial. You have them coming emerging again when they are getting together the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum. I mean, you have them on the board of directors. What the heck is that all about?
Well, that's because the same people, isn't it?
Yeah, same people. We have to take a 3-minute break. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Ground beef, eggs, butter, cheese, soup, sandwiches, strawberries, ice cream, coffee, and more. What do these foods have in common? They all come in storable, long shelf life food for you to save and use in uncertain times. Rather, if it is a meal or a snack for a family or just yourself, CampingSurvival.com offers a huge variety of storable food for you to be prepared anytime. Go to campingsurvival.com to order all your food. Eat today, save it for tomorrow, or store it for years to come. Campingsurvival.com sells healthy, nutritious, storable food in number 10 cans and pouches. Order online today at campingsurvival.com. Use code FREEDOM and receive 5% off. Campingsurvival.com. Remember, save 5% off with code FREEDOM at campingsurvival.com on all your prepared food needs.
Are you facing foreclosure? Worried about late payments? Fight back and stay in your home. Zero Debt Guaranteed can help. We'll send you a free ebook just for calling 800-477-9256 or go to zerodebtguaranteed.com. Get the details on how to remove your risk to your debt. And so important to many homeowners today, how to stop foreclosure.
Forget loan modification.
The Zero Debt in 90 Days system can show you how to get the bank to pay your property taxes and insurance while stopping your foreclosure.
Without paying one dime.
You can take control. Stop foreclosure. Protect your cash, assets, wages, property, and sleep peacefully at night.
We've been helping people for over 18 years.
Call Zero Debt Guaranteed, 800-477-9256. Ask for free information, no obligation. That's 800-477-9256. Or visit ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com now.
There are many water filters to choose from, but there is only one system that is consistently customer rated 5 stars as the number one system for effective filtration of fluoride, radiation, drug residues, heavy metals, a wide range of radioisotopes, and more. Introducing the PureFect Ultra, the next generation water filter that also raises alkaline pH, improves antioxidant potential, and has advanced anti-radiation technology. All while using no electricity. Sold worldwide, it provides virtually instant clean water on demand. It is not made in China, and the shipping is free to all 50 states. Buy your PureFect Ultra today by visiting PureFectFilters.com or call 888-891-4821. Again, that's 888-891-4821 or visit PureFectFilters.com.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Carl Rattle. His website is SemiticControversies.blogspot.com. And how do you plan on celebrating Sunday, Yom HaShoah?
Actually, I was thinking of sitting there and writing an article on Jewish ritual murder. That's actually what I was planning to do. I think I pointed out to you in the past that the original Holocaust claim is in fact what they call the blood libel. It's possibly the only claim in the entire of Jewish, what we call Jewish studies, which is actually considered to be worse to affirm or deny than the Holocaust. And it's very simply, it's the theory, it's the position that Jews historically have committed ritual murder against non-Jews for religious reasons, at various different times. So the oldest one is back when the Seleucids took over, Jerusalem. And as I pointed out elsewhere, the actual text of the in quotes, ritual murder case, actually suggested it was a real one. And then you fast forward, through, you know, about a couple hundred years, you find additional ones under the Byzantines. Then you find the first major case in Europe and in England, the case of William of Norwich. Then shortly after, the case of Little St. Hugh of Lincoln, which then moves across the continent to cases like St. Simon of Trent, St. Hugh of Andreas of Rhin, and so forth. And it rolls up right through the years to the latter end of the 19th century. When you have cases like Tisza Ilyitsa in Hungary, and more particularly, you have the cases of Xanten in Germany, you have the case of Königsberg in Germany, and then you have possibly the most famous of all ritual murder cases, The Belize trial from 1911 to 1913. The reason this is so, these kind of trials are so important in understanding the, in quotes, the Holocaust, is because they, in many ways, prefigure an awful lot of the indignation, the attacks, the personal attacks that go on against opponents of it. Some of the major figures in attacking this, these particular claims, specifically the Belize trial, will be somewhat well known to some of the people listening. In the Belize trial, for example, we have a chap named Asher Ginzburg come up, who, of course, is the founder of Labor Zionism. And he frequently wrote about the Belize trial, how it was awful, how it was going to be, how it was going to be a curse upon the Jews and so forth. There's another chap, I've mentioned before, called Alexander Targa. He was a Jew who is one of the major sources for, in quotes, the debunking of the Protocols of Zion. In fact, he was probably a Soviet agent, as he was working in the Soviet archives late 1930s. And of course, as you well know, Deanna, in the late 1930s, if you were foreign, in the Soviet Union, let alone in Moscow itself, then you had to either be in complete concord with Stalin or you'd be dead. The other people involved, for example, are Oskar Grunenberg, who was one of Trotsky's attorneys. He was also the major lead attorney, and he was also a major figure in the Zionist movement in Russia, and also he was one of the leading figures in the Social Democratic Party, aka the what became the Bolshevik and the Menshevik parties in Russia. Another one who's involved in pretty heavily in it was Leon Trotsky, and on the other side of the fence, and even a person that I'm sure you're aware of, and most of your listeners are aware of, a chap named Justinus Prenitas. He wrote the book The Talmud Unmasked in 1892. Yes. That's where he comes from, the Belize trial. The interesting thing about it is because you get so many of these later big players involved in it, and also the fact that it is a trial where the amount of Jewish influence is actually actually hard to understate. For example, in Soja Sikowski's article, The Impact of the Belize Case on Central and Western Europe, in the Proceedings of the American Academy for Jewish Research, in 1963, he says quite bluntly that almost nothing was done without Jewish intercessions. To be quite blunt, he's talking about the fact that the Belize case was an opportunity for the Russian Jews, and Jews globally, actually, to attack Russia, to discredit Russia, to claim that Russia was basically what the Third Reich has now become in Jewish propaganda, the enemy of all true nations, all democracies, and what have you. And fundamentally, the Jews are so powerful, they managed to get the United States to actually null a trade agreement with Russia over the Belize case, which gives you some idea of just how the scale of Jewish power at this time, and particularly the American Jewish Committee. Another interesting point is that during the First World War, the Belize case was used to be, to create pogroms by the Zionist, committee, who worked with the German Special Operations Executive. It was the opposite number of the more famous Balfour Agreement. The Germans had their own with the Jews. These groups were created problems behind the lines for the Russians, which actually caused pogroms, ironically, and so forth. So essentially you've got all the elements of the Holocaust story, shall we say, are prefigured very early on, but they're not against Germany. They're against Russia. All the legends about the Holocaust fundamentally come from earlier legends dating from at least the 1880s in relation to Russia, and specifically the pogroms. So the 6 million Jews, most famously, probably comes from the 1840s originally, as I've stated elsewhere, from another ritual murder trial, the Damascus Affair in 1840.
Right. Which you've talked about before, I think is very fascinating.
But the 6 million became, in quotes, a fact in the 1880s. in during the so-called pogroms. In fact, according to most recent research, they weren't state sponsored. They weren't even approved by the state. The Russian government was just a bit inefficient, so it couldn't put down local insurrections. But for 50, 60 years, Jews claimed constantly that these were a Russian conspiracy, an anti-Semitic conspiracy against the Jews. And again, the police trial is exactly the same thing. They claim it's an anti-Semitic conspiracy against the Jews to exterminate the Jews because they want to kill the Jews. Because the victim of the police trial was a little boy called Andrei Yuzhevsky, who is 13. And it's commonly claimed, and there is no actual evidence for it, as far as I can work out from the Russian newspapers where it supposedly comes, that anti-Semitic leaflets were handed out at Yuzhevsky's trial blaming the Jews. This doesn't seem to me to be plausible, given that I haven't found an actual source for the claim other than several contemporary Jewish authors making it.
Hmm.
So again, it's that same thing of trying to claim one thing, and then you look, and when you look for an originating source in a credible source, you don't tend to find it. Again, it's like the Holocaust, because the Holocaust, for lack of a better term, doesn't have an international leg to stand on. If you think, where on earth did all these Holocaust survivors come from for a start? But again, it's the same thing. In the 1920s, the Jew at the center of the Belis trial was a chap named Mendel Belis, was basically shipped off to Paris, because he was considered to be a valuable asset in the struggle against fascism and what have you. But by the mid-1920s, he had largely been forgotten. Like many Holocaust survivors, in quotes, he was largely abandoned by Jews, apart from those who like to invoke his name. So you get the same situation as you have with the Holocaust. You have the Holocaust now. You've got a situation where Russia is being portrayed as the great evil. Germany is much like the Third Reich is now. You've got an anti-Jewish event, what we call a Shoah event, Hebrew for Chad catastrophe, of course, which is how the Holocaust is described. But it's also how the pogroms were described, how the Belis trial was described. And it's also, if you look back in, for example, the Jewish Chronicle of Prague from 1615, it's also how they described ritual murder cases. It's one of these things that Jewish history likes to ignore, is the fact that the Jews have historically used the same charges against their opponents for the last 100 years or so, if not longer. They haven't really innovated much in that time frame. And again, you get the same situation where you've got all these memoirs of the case, like that of the, in quotes, investigators that one Jew called Ezekiel Lakin has called the Sherlock Holmes of Kiev. A chap named Boris Brzezkowski, I can't really say his name very well, and he supposedly found the real culprits. In fact, he didn't. All he did was he constructed a case against the mother of the boy that Andrei Yuzhevsky was last seen with, and from then on, it gets really horrible. It gets quite horrible and acrimonious, in much the same way as the Holocaust trials became in many ways acrimonious between the Western powers, because the Jews wanted to focus on Jewish suffering. The Russians were more concerned about, just general atrocities against Russians, whereas the West was more concerned about the justification for the war.
So again, right, there's all kinds of things going on there, but the Jews certainly had a lot of focus, and Jackson, in his opening remarks on that first day, really focused on the Jewish situation.
Yeah.
But anyway, we do have a break, so we'll be right back in 3 minutes.
I'm American gardeners and fellow patriots, make the right choice with your money, time, and your family food supply. Choose 100% pure heirloom seeds in the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. Why spend more? The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com is only $37.95 and includes 20 varieties of pure, hardy, easy-to-grow heirloom seeds. Yes, only $37.95. That's 70% less than our competitors. You could buy three Survival Seed Vaults for less than one of theirs. The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com includes detailed planting and seed-saving instructions and ships same day. Plus, all orders over $49 ship free. MyPatriotSupply.com is American-owned by patriots like you, passionate about freedom and preparedness. Call now, 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness items when you order at MyPatriotSupply.com. Choose the original. Choose the Survival Seed Vault at MyPatriotSupply.com.
As many of you know, natural supplements are fantastic for your body and have zero side effects. You need to restore your body's natural balance. TerraVim strives to carry only the highest quality dietary supplements and natural vitamins that can be beneficial in helping your body recover from the impact of daily stress, allergens, illness, environmental pollution, and the aging process. Why buy from TerraVim? Simple. TerraVim provides a rewards program. Earn $1 for every $10 spent, free health consultations, free shipping on all orders, and an additional 10% discount on every order when you mention the coupon code RBN. Call 866-647-4372. That's 866-647-4372, or go to TerraVim.com. That's TerraVim.com. TerraVim, the best supplements on earth.
Now more than ever, killing many viruses and bacteria in our homes and at work is important. With the flu epidemic running rampant, you need to protect yourself and your family the best you can with purified air. Our air purifiers not only kill many viruses and bacteria in the air, but on surfaces too. Our air purifiers will also kill molds, fungi, mildew, oxidizes chemical fumes and toxic gases, removes dust, pollen, pet odors, and smoke. We have portable units, HVAC and industrial size units. In our homes today, protect your family the best you can by calling 1-877-605-9200 or go to our online store at republicbroadcasting.org. Call today to receive your 10% off and free shipping on any home unit. 1-877-605-9200.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Carl Rattle. He is the author of Communism and the Jews, a source reader. His website is SemiticController.blogspot.com. And you know, we've all heard of Jewish ritual murder, but so many people just cannot wrap their minds around such a concept that they say, oh, people didn't do that. Mix it in with their bread. That's stupid.
Well, the interesting thing about it is the fact, if you look back at the original literature of ritual murder, that doesn't come into it. The matzah thing comes later. If you look at the literature on witchcraft, what the literature on witchcraft says, and the witch craze tells us very adamantly, is that over time, an original core of activity can morph into how society perceives it. So a Jew can commit ritual murder, say, believing the stories about ritual murder, which have maybe been embellished sometime before, believing that's what he or she should be doing. And the same, that's what we learn from witchcraft, is that that actually happens, and it's part of a cognitive process that is well attested in the literature. But one of the arguments that was often brought out, as you just said, is that you can't believe that a Jew would do this. Well, the logical point to that is, why not? because the argument is made, and it's made by people like Cecil Roth in The Ritual Murder, Libel, and the Jew, based on a Christian Hebraicist called André Ossander in the 1500s, who argued that because the Torah demands that Jews not drink blood, or consume blood in any way, as part of Kashrut, that Jews couldn't have committed ritual murder. Now, this is a little bit nuts, because it doesn't make an allowance for a potentially deviant reading of that particular commandment. For example, there was a German Hebraicist from the 1880s to the 1930s called Dr. Erich Bischoff. And he's an interesting character, in part because he is one of the few Hebraicists who's ever really taken on this question. And he's also the student of the major Christian Hebraicist on the other side of the fence, Johann Strack. Bischoff posited, and I generally agree, that the actual commandment, if you like, that the Jews use to just Jews have used to justify this particular practice, is found in the Zohar. And he offered a translation of a text of part of the Zohar, which he translates as saying that, you shall consume blood, effectively. You shall the Gentile blood. He translates and corrects himself and so forth. And we should add that Bischoff is not a crank. Bischoff is someone who is still well regarded as a Hebraicist in spite of being an avowed anti-Semite in today. I mean, David Bial in his Blood and Belief, which is in California University Press, 2006, says quite bluntly that Bischoff was a very, very good Hebraicist. And he doesn't actually address this particular part of Bischoff's corpus, because he wrote it in his 1929 Das Blut in Jüdischen Schriften, Hammerwehrlag Leipzig, where basically he argues that Jews haven't historically done this as a group. And that's where he differ. He and myself, I follow his argument, differ from a lot of people in this particular regard. People have tended to think the Jews as a people practice ritual murder. I would say no. The evidence suggests, because there are relatively few cases, and they tend to come in batches, and they also tend to be focused around settlements. So they're not widespread. They're focused around families, settlements, and there is a common factor in every single case of ritual murder. Well, sorry, most of them, all the arguable ones anyway. Like Trent and Rin and so forth, that in the Jewish community at that particular time, there are a lot of transient Jews. So a lot of religious pilgrims had traveled there and had just happened to be staying the night at all these different houses. That, I don't think, can be a coincidence when you're dealing with something like this. Particularly if it's a small community, and you potentially have got what you might call a rogue Tzaddik, a rogue Jewish holy man, perhaps propounding a belief in this particular Jewish belief system that blood is required. However, an interesting addenda has been noted elsewhere by Dr. Johann von Leers in 1941, when he said very bluntly that the interesting thing is that the people who have talked about ritual murder haven't talked about a particular practice in Judaism called kapalot, where Jews slice the neck of a hen and they swing it around, and that actually obviates sin. They cleanse their sin by sacrificing a chicken every year. Of course, it's barbaric, but it is what they've done. And if you can look up on YouTube and you'll see them swinging these chickens around. Not very pleasant. And sorry, this break, isn't it?
Interesting. Alrighty, we are going to a break. We'll get back to this chicken swinging right after the break.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
For many years, coffee lovers have learned that for the freshest coffee, you need to roast your own beans. Unfortunately, that usually meant paying more per pound for coffee than you could get it at the local grocery. Those wanting to store rich coffee for long-term use have been frustrated with the lack of quality coffee available with a long shelf life. So we usually settle for brand-name coffee, either ground or instant. But now, we have another solution. Canned green coffee beans. Green coffee beans have not been roasted. And since the bean is not cracked yet, the shelf life is many years longer than roasted or ground coffee. Due to the way it's packed, you can expect these to stay fresh for 20-plus years. Go to campingsurvival.com to order your canned green coffee beans. A single can is only $11.94. Order online today at campingsurvival.com. Use code FREEDOM and receive 5% off. Campingsurvival.com. Campingsurvival.com.
An effective 100% organic nutritional supplement is now available to be shipped out to you, rush delivery. Heart and Body Extract is a 100% natural, organic, and wild-crafted formula made out of garlic, hawthorn berries, hawthorn leaves, coleus, motherwort, bilberry, butcher's broom kelp, mistletoe, ginger, and cayenne pepper. It is an excellent formula designed to balance and support the heart and circulatory system. It is extremely effective and starts to work within days. Order your 2-month supply by visiting heartandbody.com or by calling 866-295-5305. 866-295-5305. Take the high road to a long and happy life. Heartandbody.com.
With financial uncertainty circling the globe due to job losses, decline in the housing market, a climate of corruption, bailouts, currency rigging, and unfair competition, many are once more turning to precious metals as the only hedge against the uncertainty of the future. With the U.S. House conducting hearings on proposals to confiscate workers' personal retirement accounts, including 401ks and IRAs, this is the time to secure your assets. Call Republic Trading Group today, 800-691-7898, before this happens, and find out how easy it is to convert your existing IRA and in some instances your 401k plan into real wealth now. Don't let the ravages of hyperinflation caused by the massive increase of fiat currency now flooding world markets affect your retirement account. Call RTG at 800-691-7898 and experience the security and peace of mind that only real gold and silver can offer. That number again is 800-691-7898. Call now.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Carl Rattle. He is the author of Communism and the Jews, a source reader. The website is SemiticController.blogspot.com. And you were talking about this
Kapalot.
Yes, that's pretty awful.
It's spelled K-A-P-P-A-R-O-T, if you want to look it up. It's a practice where Jews swing, basically male Jews will swing a rooster around, repeatedly around. Now, the interesting thing that Lee has pointed out, and it's quite correct, is that the Hebrew word for rooster is geber, and the exact same word is used for man, geber. The only difference is an accent. The interesting thing about that is that it means that it's very easy for Jews to take the rooster as being a sacrifice for a man. So what happens when a Jewish mystic, for example, assumes that it means man rather than rooster? And the point, insofar as there is one, is the fact that if this happens, then it would be a matter of interpretation of letters. And that is the absolute cornerstone of what we know today as Kabbalah, but is also rooted in much older Jewish mysticism related to the, the Sefer Yisraha, which is supposedly the oldest Jewish book of mysticism in existence. Legend has it written by Abraham himself. The point is that Jews interpret letters as being magical. They have a magical, shall we say, presence. Because a Hebrew character is, Hebrew is alleged to be the alphabet of God. Therefore, each consonant will have a particular value or particular significance or meaning. Now, in ritual murder, the usual interpretation is that it's some kind of, you know, Jewish cult. The best exposition of this particular theory is in Daniel Devere's 2001 Blood Libel. The interesting thing about it is the fact this leaves out, this tries to account for the fact that there aren't many cases, or aren't many, at least many known ones anyway. But I think you can go even much simpler than that. It's a simple, shall we say, mystic misunderstanding of that Gebel term, as well as the justification in the Zohar that Bischoff found. The simple fact is that ritual murder is possible. The reason it is possible is because Jews do not actually abide by all the rules or by the 613 mitzvot, because if they did, they'd be perfect, and we wouldn't have the Madoffs of this world now, would we?
Right.
The point is, Jews are quite capable of committing ritual murder, the same way a Christian would be, the same way a Buddhist would be. They can justify it in many different ways, but the question that's dogged a lot of the debate is this part of Judaism? And the answer is probably no. But, the way Judaism works is it isn't like Christianity. It doesn't have a central point. It is a series of commentators, rabbis, in different places at different times, who come up with different interpretations of the same texts. And these cults can be very, very localized. They can be international, they can be local. But, again, when you look at the cases, a lot of the Jews involved, and Belis is an example, have connections to Hasidim, to very, very radical Jewish mystical groups. Belis, as I said, is the classic example, because he's often claimed, and it is in Alexander Targa's The Decay of Tsarism, which is the fundamental book on the Belis case, still it was published in 1935, he claims that Belis wasn't in any way religious. This isn't true. Belis's father was, in fact, a Hasid, and a very pious Hasid at that. He, in fact, arranged for Belis to work at the brick factory where he allegedly killed Andrei Yuchivsky. And the chap who owned the brick factory was a man called Jonas Zaitsev. Now, Jonas Zaitsev, I had assumed, was a Gentile. But according to one recent Jewish author on the subject, is Ezekiel Lemkin, in his The Belis Transcript, 1994, he states quite unequivocally that Zaitsev was actually a Hasid himself. Either he was a convert to it, or he was actually a Jew from birth. It isn't clear. But if that is true, then that makes sense of why Belis did what he did. Because Belis, as a rule, he didn't observe the normal Jewish rites, but he did observe Yom Kippur, and Passover as well, sorry, Pesach. The murder that happened, I mean, the oddity about Belis, I should say, is the fact that he didn't have a wife. This is at a time when it's normal to have a wife. He lived in a very Gentile city, Kiev, which only had, according to the Jewish Statistical Handbook, only had 5,000 Jews at the time in 1911. And it was regarded as a holy city. So Jews were not kind of permitted in and around it. In addition, Belis seems to have been an oddball. And that reinforces a potential interpretation of him committing a ritual murder act out of some kind of deranged sort of idea about, killing Gentile children and what have you. The point is that it's very easy if you stop and ask yourself why should we dismiss this, to understand very quickly that a traumatic case can be very, very quickly discovered to be quite on quite solid grounding if we but allow ourselves to think about the subject for a bit. If you go back even further, you find the most controversial case of the lot, which is the case of St. Simon of Trent, whereby the Jews were basically caught red-handed with this kind of sacrifice going on, and because the body of the little of St. Simon had been washed into a mikveh, which is a Jewish ritual bath. And the interesting thing about it is that no author has ever been able to explain why and how the body got into the mikveh, unless the Jews put it there for whatever reason. For example, Runi Pochi Hissia in his Trent 1475 states quite unequivocally that he thinks that it was planted there, but he doesn't really tell us why. He just creates a conspiracy theory about it, including a random man called the Schweinzer. Another aspect of that particular case is the fact that the child concerned was actually bled to death, and he was circumcised. Now, why on earth someone would circumcise a person and then place the body in the Jew in a mikveh where you wouldn't be able to get the body because it has to be free flowing water for a start. It's quite beyond me. I mean, Ronnie Poach Hissia, just to give you some extent of how desperate academic apologists of ritual murder can be, he claims that he was circumcised because a thorn did it. And that's actually what he says. A thorn. No. I don't see that one somehow at all. But it's just the fact that you've got all these different cases, and they all share a very common theme that Jews do commit these things. But also, it's also interesting about timing. They all happen around the same time. Because, again, it's something that's very hard to write off as a kind of oddity. They all happen in and around Yom Kippur and Passover Purim. And one Jewish author, Eliot Horowitz, in his Reckless Rites, in 2007, Princeton, has actually stated, and quite unequivocally, that he wonders why people seem to believe that it must be that Christians have a heightened sense of their own religion at this time, and therefore they start making claims about Jews ritually murdering children. He says quite bluntly that why only the Christians? Why not the Jews? Why could not the Jews have killed someone like this? Why can they have not gone out and attacked people in the street, which they're on record again as doing quite frequently, causing again pogroms in the streets? It's just part of this, shall we say, this mythos that Jews couldn't have possibly done this. And the answer very much is why? Why could they not have done this? Because, you see them in Palestine at the moment. They will deny anything, historically and currently. But another interesting aspect of it is that you get a lot of bribery involved in ritual murder cases. In 1840, in the Damascus Affair, again, it's a ritual murder case, a very famous one again, where the first thing the Jews did when it was alleged that they were bribed, that they were committed ritual murder, was try and bribe the Sultan, and then they try and bribe the Western diplomats. And when that failed, then they began writing letters to all the Jewish communities around the world, who with the Rothschilds and the Montefiores began mobilizing to support them. The same happened in the police case. Massive support was thing, and the lady involved, the mother of Yuchitsky's friend, Vera Chibilik, in the police case, was offered 40,000 rubles to admit she had done it and take the fact, and the Jews would arrange so that she got a very, very light sentence and would be able to enjoy her money. And, you know, it's just this kind of habit of bribing people every single time this allegation is made that, again, suggests that the Jews are hiding something. And a great example, actually, is this, I don't know if you've been reading about it lately, this farrago that's going on around paedophilia in the Jewish, particularly among the highly religious Jewish community, the Hasidim.
Oh, yes. They hide it.
But the question is, if they're hiding that kind of thing, and they believe it's... What else are they hiding? Could they be hiding something like this? Quite possibly, historically speaking anyway. Because, again, a lot of the players involved in the cases come from highly religious backgrounds. They have the rabbis. They have... they're somewhere involved with radical Jewish groups. And, again, it's just that kind of... You know, that kind of uniformity of the Jews involved, which suggests that we're not dealing with a made-up crime here. Because, to be sure, there have actually been cases that have been made up. That's without doubt, in much the same way as any crime, you'll get cases where people cry, in a word, cry rape, when in fact it's not the case. But the sheer fact that you've got this uniformity means it must lend some credence to what it has. In many ways, it's the opposite of the Holocaust. The Holocaust has no evidential uniformity. All its proponents claim something different, and the only way you can make them fit together is by taking different bits of the same of different stories and putting them into one coherent narrative. Ritual murder is the opposite. You've got quite a lot of different sources, but they very largely agree on the general specifics of the crime. Where they disagree is on the individual detail. So what Jewish sect was involved, what the status of the individuals was, what the community and exactly what wounds were involved. And it's very easy just to reconcile these differences by pointing out these are different crimes in many centuries distant from each other, where you've got Jewish communities who are doing it sort of as a localized phenomenon. And you could even see it as a reaction to Christian heightened awareness of the Jewish issue, because these murders happen in and around, mainly in and around the 12th to the 15th century, when all of a sudden that's the period when Jews are being expelled, running amok, but they're being expelled, run amok, and they're being brought in by kings and what have you, and Jews have massive amounts of power. And a question I often pose to people about this is, if, as one particular theorist has suggested, anti-Semitism and these crimes and so forth are made up, are inventions, then why are witches and so forth not accused of exactly the same thing? Because they're not. The crimes the witches are accused of are very different. The crimes the Jews are accused of are very specific. Why not the Muslims accused of the same thing? Because it's not widely known, but there was a small Islamic population in most Western countries during the 12th century. So then why were the Muslims not credited with such behavior, considering they're as much an infidel, as much an enemy of Christendom as the Jews? And it just begs that question of why the Jews? Why only the Jews, to be precise? And it's something that has never really been answered. You'll see the Jews talk about it in the texts on anti-Semitism. Why the Jews? And they never really answer that question. And all they can say is the Jews are special. The Jews are unique. They have been in Western societies as minorities. And again, the question comes down to, no, they haven't. They haven't been the only minority. Why do they have these specific charges against them? Why are they charged with host desecration? Why are they charged with poisoning wells? Why are they charged with ritual murder? Why do they, get involved in, revolutionary groups all the time?
Well, it's those terrible guys that are making up all these horrible stories about them. That's all.
Yeah, it's brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah.
If in doubt, claim that your enemies having a fantasy.
Sure.
And blames a chimera, as they would like to term it. It's just this kind of. And you can see it in many respects. You can almost see that the Holocaust is an inversion of the Jewish ritual murder theory, as they understand it. What they're suggesting is that you have killed an amount of people, therefore you owe us a blood debt. And it's the same logic they apply to what they call the blood libel, whereby the deicide of Jesus is considered to be the origin of the blood libel. Therefore, the Christians believe that the Jews owe them a blood debt, because of everything, because that particular thing. Therefore, all their actions against the Jews are justified. That particular theory, of course, can be fairly easily dealt with by looking at the particular literature, the Christian literature at the time, which didn't focus on that particular aspect of deicide and didn't link the two. But the fact that the Jews claim this and then they invert it with the Holocaust, because bear in mind, that is, if you think about it, deicide, according to the Jews, is simply a tool for Christians to persecute Jews and get money off them. Think about what the Holocaust is for the Jews. It's a tool for them to claim that the rest of the world owes them a living.
Right, to the billions of dollars.
Yeah.
Alrighty, we do have a break. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. While we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country, here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store or call us at 1-877-605-9200.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Time to relax and unwind. What better way to do so than with Santa Barbara Bells? For over 25 years, our wind chimes have been helping people to relax and enjoy life. Turn your home environment into a pleasurable experience. From the small overture chime to the large super bass, you will find just the right chime to enjoy. All wood, strings, and cordage are protected for long life, and all parts are rust-proof. You have 10 sizes to choose from. To see and hear more of the chimes, go to SantaBarbaraBells.com or call us at 805-733-1513. Santa Barbara Bells is currently having a springtime sale. Come to the website and save up to 50% on all of our chimes. SantaBarbaraBells.com.
Welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest today is Carl Rattle. He is the author of Communism and the Jews, a source reader. His website is SemiticController.blogspot.com. And during the break, I was reading a story that broke, this morning, Astonishing Bravery of the Jewish Family Who Escaped the Holocaust by Hiding in an Underground Cave for a Year and a Half.
Oh, I love it, really. Do you remember the woman who suggested she lived with the wolves for 3 years? And she was taken seriously for the best part of 20, which is even better.
Yes, Amazing.
Yes, you just sit there and you sit there and it is literally a wonderland, isn't it? You sit there and go.
Yes.
At what point do you think these stories are real? I mean, the people said, I broke into Auschwitz was the latest one, wasn't it? I broke into Auschwitz and then I broke out again. And then I told the world and no one else seems to have remembered this. Okay. I don't understand. I read sort of stuff in the news about Holocaust survivors and I just sit there almost incredulous.
Well,
how can you believe it?
A test to the gullibility of the American public, I swear. It's just amazing.
It isn't just the American public, though, is it? It's everyone. It's the Germans, it's the British, it's the Americans, it's the Canadians.
Right.
The only people who seem remotely skeptical about this seem to be Asians and the Islamic world, who seem to think, okay, why are you so obsessed with this particular group?
Right, and it's so sad that the Germans believe it. I was reading this morning in the autobiography or the Journal of Donuts, who was head of the Navy,
mm-hmm,
and he believed it. He saw these pictures in Stars and Stripes, and he of some of the camp victims, and he believed the story that the Americans were telling in this magazine. He said, surely. Certainly, they were not making this up, and I think he later changed his mind, but, you see the pictures, and it's such an emotional impact on people when you see the thin dead bodies, then you just don't go and ask any further questions about it. Well, where did these bodies come from? Did they perchance, drag them in from Dresden, or where did they get these bodies? And why are they,
Who knows? It's thoroughly depressing. I mean, I was recently at the dentist and I happened just to be sitting there waiting to go in. And, the secretary had just come back from Poland. And I'm sitting there just, just doing my thing. And she started talking to someone about Auschwitz. And I was just sitting there, oh no.
Yes.
And it was the whole, how could they do this to the Jews? I saw the gas chamber and it just, I had this urge to just get up and say, you didn't see the gas chamber. That wasn't a gas chamber. That was a morgue.
I'm surprised she didn't jump up on her desk and start screaming at her.
No, I'd love to, but...
You're more civilized than that, but that is what we feel like doing, I'm sure.
Yes, it is very frustrating.
Yes, it is. Alrighty, we're taking our 60-second top of the hour break. We'll be right back after station ID and a word from our sponsors.